From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Don Dunn again, filling in for some young men that are out of the office right now, as you say, filling in for a young man who's had some knee surgery. Talked to Bill today. A little pain, a little discomfort, but overall he sounded pretty good, and hopefully he'll be back with us soon. Dan should be joining us here shortly. This is The Drive. We'd love to hear from you. It is Tuesday, August the 5th. Another cloudy day in beautiful downtown Auburn, and we're very fortunate to have a little cooler weather today, and I know that's going to be good for football practice tomorrow. And we're very fortunate to have a familiar face, a legend. Andy Burcham is going to join us for a little while on The Drive. Again, if you get a chance, give us a call, 334-321-1390. Andy, how you doing, buddy?
Don, I'm doing well, and you sound of great voice today.
Well, I'm a little nervous. I've got this Drew and I holding down the fort, and I really appreciate you joining us. How have you been doing, my friend?
I've been doing well. You know, you remember what it's like that first week of practice and getting back out there, and how exciting everything is. And my guess is, for the coaches, not only is it exciting, but, you know, there's a little bit of nervousness. You know, how are these guys going to respond to practice, and how are they going to respond to everything as y'all get ready for that first ball game? And for Auburn, of course, that's the 29th at Baylor.
Yeah, not long away. It'll be here before we know it. Yeah, you're right. As a coach, I remember you were anxious, you were nervous, you were excited, some anxiety, wanting everything to go right, wanting everybody to come back in great shape. And, you know, now they're here year-round, so it's not like when we had to, you know, wait for them to come in August. And it's an exciting time for Auburn, and I'm really excited about our team this year, and I think everyone around town is, and I know the coaches are. The players seem to be, you know, really excited, to have a great attitude, and I think we're going to be a better football team. And we got a tough opener, as you know, Andy.
Well, this Baylor ball club concerns me, especially. To me, Baylor defensively is a bit of an unknown, in spite of the fact that Dave Aranda is a fabulous defensive coach.
Yes,
and they come off of an eight win season from a year ago. They bring a great deal of momentum into this year, but you know, in spite of the fact that Dave Aranda is a defensive guy. And the best part of their game last year, obviously, was their offense. They're the fourth best offense in the Big 12 a year ago. And they returned two tailbacks. They returned their quarterback. They returned two of their best receivers off of that squad. So, I don't, you know, how does Auburn attack this team, the Baylor offense? And on the other hand, what is Auburn able to do from an offensive standpoint against a Baylor defense that, my guess is going to be much, much improved, you know, from
right,
a year ago.
Right.
You know,
yes, sir.
So there, you know, there's so many things that you do between now, the start of practice, and that first game. But you don't know everything that's going to happen until you actually get out there and get between the lines.
Exactly.
And for Auburn, it's that Friday night. Baylor is that Friday night there in Waco, Texas.
Right. Which will be a tough road game. It should be, you know, nice and hot and humid, and it's quite a challenge. And you're right; you don't know what to expect. You kind of think you have an idea. You've watched tons of tape. You've broken down every aspect of Baylor, but there's always a wrinkle, you know, one or two wrinkles that they throw at you. And the thing we always try to do, you got to worry about yourself first. I think let's take care of us. I really believe that we're going to be so much better in the offensive line. and the defensive line. I think that's going to be our plus maybe going into the Baylor game. But you're right. They finished strong last year, Andy. They really did.
It was they went from a team that just won a handful of games 2 years ago.
Right.
And then they put together eight wins, and they closed the year. I mean, they went 6-3.
Yes.
In the Big 12. And yes. I guess preseason, you see them ranked anywhere around the number four spot preseason in the Big 12 this season. So, they're highly thought of. They're at home. There will be a great deal of excitement there.
Yes.
We're all going to be excited. We're all going to be excited about this one and how it goes. And for Auburn, this is nothing new. I mean, Bill and Dan have been talking about this for quite some time, that wide receiver room for Auburn is terrific.
Yes.
And I think is better even than some believe. And, how well will this offensive line protect Jackson Arnold? Will he be given time to get the ball to these receivers? Who steps forward? And Bill and I talked about this last week on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Who steps forward for Auburn in the tailback room right now? And right now, it's two newcomers,
yeah,
that have been getting more of the carries in practice, and Darrell Robinson and Omar from mm-hmm. Auburn High School.
Right, right.
And so, we really, both Cobb and Alston are nursing injuries at this point. I think there's plenty of time for these guys to get healthy.
Yes.
And get ready for that over. So, listen, there are so many question marks, and you just got a finite amount of time to get ready. I can't imagine what it's like for these coaches as they know that they've got a big, big test in that opener at Baylor on the 29th.
Yeah, no doubt. And like you said, I know Coach Freeze is very pleased with the freshman, not only Omar, but I've heard him talk in some of the interviews. He's really pleased with all the new freshmen, and I think we got a great group. But you're right. You don't know what to expect in that first game. You just hope and pray that everything goes right. You don't create a lot of silly penalties, a lot of offsides, false starts, and hold on to the football and eliminate turnovers. And again, the kicking game, which we struggled last year, but I'm so happy that the young man, I believe, is going to be back and healthy this year, which will really, really help us.
Well, and, you heard Coach Freeze talk about the practice that they had on Saturday, basically an open practice.
Yes.
And how well Auburn kicked the ball in that practice. I think they only missed one of several field goal attempts in that game. And, Don, you're right. You look back on a couple of Auburn's losses a year ago, close losses a year ago, and the kicking game was one of the reasons that Auburn didn't win.
Exactly.
A couple of those. Not the only reason, but a part of the reason that Auburn lost a couple of those close ball games.
Yeah, no doubt.
And McPherson, 2 years ago, two seasons ago, didn't miss a kick.
Right.
Which is unheard of.
Yeah.
And then, they had him. He was gone for most of last year. That was a bit of a problem. I do think this about Towns Magoo. I think he's a better kicker this year, and I think even with McPherson being back, I think we'll see Towns, the Auburn High School player. I think we'll see him on the field. If nothing less, I think we may see him with kickoffs because we know that he has a big leg.
Yes,
for Auburn this year, that's something that Hugh Freeze has talked about. That we'll see both of those kickers out there. Now, again, we haven't even talked about this, but Don, how important it is. I mean, you got to keep guys healthy.
Yes.
At this point. And losing McPherson for almost all of last year was a big loss for that Auburn team.
Yeah,
while there are some spots on this team where Auburn has very good depth, there are some spots as well where key injuries would really hurt the Tigers because of depth and trying to develop that depth right now. And one of those spots, Don, is that spot you were in.
Yeah.
That you coached on that defensive front. I mean, they're trying to develop that depth at nose tackle and defensive tackle going into this season.
Right. I know they have some great young ones, a lot of great prospects, but you're right. You got to get them ready. You got to keep them healthy, and you got to have them in that fourth quarter when you need to get pressure on that quarterback and disrupt him. And you're right, Andy, the kicking game, you know, you think back to last year, it was so much of the hidden yardage we lost, you know, the
right.
Not catching a punt or a penalty. But, yeah, those things, I know Coach has been working on that. I know he's addressed it. I remember him talking about that even before spring practice. So hopefully we'll be able to, you know, take care of that. And the hidden yardage, like you said, is so important. Special teams, staying healthy, and stay healthy before we get to this first game. Like you said, that's
absolutely
a key point too. So
no question about that. I mean, you know, the new punter that Auburn has in Hudson Cock, who comes to Auburn, transferred in from Oklahoma State, of course from Australia. It seems like many of the kickers in this day and age.
Exactly.
Are coming from the land down under, and a left-footed kicker for Auburn as well. I'm not sure that really matters, but that'll be something that we watch. And McPherson and Towns with the kicks as well. And then I want to know who's Auburn's return guys.
Right, so important.
Rayshon Pleasant, who did not practice. Because of an angle,
yeah.
Because of an ankle, excuse me.
Right.
Is a fabulous return guy out of Tulane. I mean, is he the guy?
Yeah.
For Auburn, is Singleton going to be a return guy for Auburn?
For sure.
With the outstanding speed, the highly touted wide receiver transfer from Georgia Tech. Is it someone else? Is it Malcolm Simmons who steps into that role even more so this year? So a lot of questions to be answered before Auburn suits up for that first time, and for the first time in a long time in Nike gear as well. I think guys are excited about putting on Nikes.
I was
talking to a couple of them, and they're excited about having Nike on their feet.
That's a big deal. It really is. You know, Under Armour was great. I was Under Armour not only at Auburn for all those years. When we went to Texas Tech, we were Under Armour. And they were good to us, but Nike's just special. You know that, Andy. It's a famous brand known through the whole world.
It's a global sort of deal. Coach, you've done an amazing job so far. I'm happy I can jump in. I just came straight from the airport to jump in. Hey there, Andy Burcham. How you doing? Hey. As I sit down, Andy, can you hang for one more segment if we take a break?
Absolutely.
All right, let's do that. You're listening to The Drive, ESPN 106.7. Dan and Coach Don Dunn in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we're talking with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. We'll be back with more. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Coach Don Dunn in the studio as Bill Cameron convalesces.
Yep.
Should have. I think we've both been in contact with the big fella.
Right.
Over the last day or so.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he could be back on the air soon. You know, by the end of the week. Don't know the next time he's in studio, because I think we're going to let him use
rehab.
Some of the. Yeah, we're going to let him play the home game edition. You know, you're going to let him take the take home.
That's right.
Edition, but in the meantime, it's great to be back. Thanks for thanks for keeping the. Thanks for keeping the train on the tracks for me.
We kept the lights on. That's about it.
Glad I have a show to return to on Tuesday.
Yeah. And many thanks to Brian yesterday and Drew taking care of me and Tracy and everybody.
All three of you. You and Drew and Brian, really appreciate you guys helping out yesterday with both of us unavailable. We're talking with Andy Burcham, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, as we get ready. Hey, Andy, when's the first edition of Tiger Talk? I know that's got to be coming up in the next in the next couple of weeks, right?
August 18th. That's a Monday, right?
That's the first day of classes. I'm told by Drew is that Monday the 18th.
Okay, well, I don't think that has anything to do with it, but apparently it coincides. Yes, we will be our first Tiger Talk and Tiger Talk again through football season will be on Mondays. This year, and our first will be on location at the Graduate. That's a a private event, Tiger Talk, although we'll be broadcasting the event. And then the Monday prior to the Baylor game, of course, we'll be out at Baumhauer's Victory Grill for the rest of the football season. I look forward to being back. Right now, our guests on that first Tiger Talk on the 18th include Hugh Freeze, Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, Auburn soccer coach James Armstrong. So we look forward to being at the graduate for that first Tiger Talk on the 18th. And then, of course, back at the spot that we're at for the rest of the football season and basketball as well, out of Baumhauer's Victory Grill the following Monday.
Yeah, and that Monday will be game week, right? The one at Baumhauer's a week later will be
Baumhauer's. That first at Baumhauer's will be game week, so it'll be our first edition of a game week at Tiger Talk, and we'll obviously be talking with Coach Freeze very, very intently as we get ready for the Baylor Bears on the 29th.
Yeah, amazing to think that Friday marks. We're three weeks away from Auburn and Baylor on Friday night.
That gives us all a little bit of heartburn.
It's wild to think. Yeah, we are rapidly approaching. And speaking of Auburn soccer, just got the email that Coach Armstrong will be talking with the media tomorrow before Hugh Freeze's media availability. That was the email I just got from Tucker that there's going to be an availability with Coach Armstrong on Wednesday, August 6th, and that's an exciting. I mean, look, Coach Hoppe. I mean, what a legacy she leaves behind. What a program she helped build, and now Coach Armstrong taking the reins.
We talked today. We do a weekly mini podcast this week in Auburn soccer. And they won their first match, their exhibition, their first friendly against Georgia Southern last week, 2-1.
Could have been described as a rainy, right? Not quite, maybe not a friendly, but a rainy, right?
Yeah, they had to. I think they had to cut the match short by 15 minutes because of weather. And now they get ready for their final exhibition match at Memphis on Friday, and then next week they have two home matches against Louisville and Samford. So this is the final match before it all counts for the Tigers. But we all know what Karen Hoppe did at Auburn, and she established the program and took it to the heights that we know of Auburn soccer today. A perennial SEC challenger, a perennial NCAA tournament team, and now James Armstrong comes in as a former assistant coach under Karen Hoppe, and then went and did an unbelievable job at Mississippi State. And, took that team to an SEC championship a year ago, was the SEC Coach of the Year. A lot of people really thought he should have been the National Coach of the Year. I think Auburn feels very, very good under the leadership of James Armstrong. But now the rest of the media gets to hear from Coach Armstrong and Coach Freeze tomorrow. So looking forward to that joint press conference and hear what both gentlemen have to say about their teams. And we're by the time Coach Freeze steps to the podium tomorrow, his team will be about a full week into its practice session as it gears up for that Baylor game on the 29th.
And with Coach Freeze, the last couple of years, it feels like the more, and it would stand to reason that the longer you get into preseason practice, the more in-depth he can be at his media availabilities about where certain position groups stand, what he expects, where surprises have come. So I'm curious to see what Coach Freeze has to say tomorrow. I know Justin we collaborated a little bit on something that he shared with the newsletter subscribers about some players that have caught our eye this preseason. And I mean, you can look really at almost any position. And there's a candidate or two or some intrigue, and I'd be interested to know, Andy, if there's anyone that you found yourself really interested in seeing or more interested in seeing this season after the first few days of preseason practice.
Well, it's not going to be earth shattering for me to say this because I know that Justin's talked about it. I think Jason Caldwell's been talking about it. All the guys and gals that cover the team. But just the opportunity that we've seen from Omar Mabson at this point, the true freshman at Auburn who is of age to be playing as a true senior at Auburn High School this fall, And with the injuries and the nicks and bruises and all that with Jeremiah Cobb and Amari Alston, this young man's been given an opportunity. And he looks the part. Let me tell you, I'm impressed with what we've seen from Omar. And because I'll be honest, when we went into this practice, he was not a guy that was really on my radar screen at the tailback spot because of Alston and Cobb and Darrell and Alvin Henderson. I mean, and yet here's a guy that's getting some touches right now, along with Darrell Robinson at the tailback spot. And I think that will change somewhat with both Cobb and Alston coming back. But it's good to know that those guys, especially Omar, has, you know, I think responded, been given the opportunity early on. The wide receiver room, I think, is as advertised after a week of practice. I mean, it's not just Cam Coleman and Malcolm Simmons, but it's guys, of course, like Eric Singleton. And Horatio Fields and Cameron King and Sam Turner and Bryce Kane and Perry Thompson. You know, that's a lot of names to fit into that rotation for Auburn this season. So those are a couple guys from an offensive standpoint that I think have stood out, at least in my mind, made a splash, so to speak, for Auburn from an offensive standpoint. And We're less than a week into practice at this point, and there's time for others to step forward for Auburn this year. And then there's the obvious. I mean, the guys like a Jay Crawford, who I think, you know, a great deal is thought of for Jay. And I think he has responded in his first week of practice. It's been good to see Champ Anthony get out there, get back, and will continue to get more healthy as he gears up for the season as well.
Yeah, I keep looking at those second-year players, Andy, and you have some that played a lot, some that maybe didn't play as much as they wanted to, but I imagine it's got to be, I've asked Coach Dunn about this, you know, the thought that once you know what you're getting into, once you've gotten on the field and you've gotten a taste of college football action, that next offseason feels really important, because then you have something to base, you know, your expectations off of it. And for a player like Jay Crawford, it would have been really easy for Jay Crawford last year to think, I'm not going to play very much. Look at who else is here in the secondary. You got Keontae Scott starting. You got Kayan Lee and Champ Anthony was playing so well when the season starts. Jay Crawford to go from that to playing as much as he did and to now have an offseason where you can build on that. I mean, there are many players you could say that about, but Jay Crawford's one that comes to mind where it's like, wow, I really want to see year two for a guy like that, considering the whirlwind that year one must have been. And then I guess there's somebody like Amaris Williams, right, who didn't see the field very much in his first year at Auburn, but saw it a little bit and now knows what it takes and what he needs to do to see the field more. And, I mean, it's you know, their first years on campus were very different as far as how they were deployed and what they got out of their freshman years. But I think they're both guys where, you know, two of several where there's real reason to be excited about what they could do in year two.
Here's what I think, and Don, you talked about this in the first segment. A year ago, Auburn had to rely on a lot of true freshmen to play a lot of important minutes, and we saw that a ton in the secondary a year ago. And Auburn likes this freshman class that's in now. I don't think this Auburn team, though, has to rely on those freshmen as early and as important minutes as they did a year ago. But with that said, those guys like A.J. Crawford or, you know, well, there are others that played important minutes for Auburn in that secondary that are back or played important minutes as sophomores. Sylvester Smith.
Caleb
is another one.
Caleb Harris would be a great example.
Those guys, I look for those guys to take that big step because of the minutes that they played a year ago. Yeah. Auburn does need Amaris Williams to step up at the defensive end spot behind Kelbrick Falk. It was interesting. Last Friday, I hosted a Q&A with John Cohen and Hugh Freeze with Tigers Unlimited. They had Tigers Unlimited had its It's donors in the old athletic indoor facility.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had 1,600 folks in there, and I did a Q&A.
This is before they put all the Under Armour stuff in there for the fire sale, Andy?
Yes, exactly, because they tore that down and then got ready for the Under Armour fire sale. Exactly right.
Wow.
And one thing that caught my ear from Coach Freeze was, and he was talking about the guys up front defensively, and he basically said, listen, I need guys that are going to give me 15 relentless plays a game.
Right.
And I never really thought about it that way. They're not looking for guys to go out there and give them 30 snaps in that defense. They need 15.
They're not asking. How about this? They're not asking guys to pace themselves, right?
No, like, they want them to go all out. All out for 15 plays a game in that rotation. And that kind of caught my eye a little bit. And that was interesting to me. And I know that's not earth-shattering news, but that one caught my ear. With what Coach Freeze had said.
Yeah, I agree with him 100%. You know, nowadays, it's changed so much from even when I coached, Andy. You want to have a good rotation up front. But like we were talking yesterday on the show, if you've even got like a Reggie White and he's gassed late in the game and he's played 30, 40, 50 snaps, I don't care how great he is, he's not going to give you the effort. And that is a great concept and idea. Keep him fresh. Go 100% for 10, 15 plays, and you'll be so much better off.
Well, it's an interesting part because there is room for guys to take that step forward at defensive tackle and nose tackle.
Yeah, and also, like we were talking yesterday with Brian Matthews, it keeps your defensive line room happy. When you're playing and you know you're going to play, you're going to give better effort in practice, in meetings, in the classroom. It just, everybody wants to play and be a part, and I think it's a great idea. We got to just stay healthy.
Can't imagine what it must have been like a couple of years ago when you had three or four defensive linemen playing all the snaps and then very little participation elsewhere. And that's got to be so tough on those bodies in the second half
and wears you down, like you said, even in the season. By the fifth or sixth game, you're gassed, you're beat up. But ideally you'd love to have like a 6 or 7 man rotation, but as a coach you got to put them in. I used to catch myself nervous. Oh, I can't put this guy in. And I remember Coach Tuberville would come down and say, "You got to play him. You got to play him, because if you don't, you're not. What are you saving them for?"
And that was an era where kids didn't leave like they could now, right?
Exactly.
Like now, players, it's like now you had to play them 20 years ago,
right? And that's another thing. If they play, they're going to be happy, and hopefully, they don't transfer.
And I think it was you who told me, Coach, that that's a position where it's not like you go to the bench and you slug some water and you go back in if you're tired. It's like a starting pitcher, Andy. They need 5 or 6 days to get ready before they can go again.
It's so much.
Well, again, so much is going to happen between now and that opener at Baylor. And there's so many questions to be answered. And there are going to be some things that come up that we're not aware of yet.
Yep.
You know, that you've got to deal with.
For sure.
We'll hope maybe we get some more answers from Coach Freeze when he does his presser tomorrow.
The more physical practice gets as we get closer to the season, the more comfortable I feel asking him about the offensive line. I feel like you ask about the offensive line in the first week, right? And it's he can evaluate, he can give you his best guess, but that feels like a position where you need to see him get into pads and start pushing each other around.
I love the potential of this offensive front. I think Auburn is better up front offensively than it's been in years. But those guys have to produce. Those new tackles,
right?
They've got to protect the quarterback. Those middle three guys, Wright and Lou and Wade, those guys have got to play like we think they should in that middle three for Auburn. And then you've got to have that depth behind those guys. So I was at practice yesterday, and we were just watching that wide receiver room. And maybe we make too much of this wide receiver room. I'm not sure. But for that wide receiver room to be effective, Jackson Arnold's got to get them the ball effectively. Jackson Arnold has to have room, has to have time to find those receivers and make the reads and make the throws. To me, it all comes down to that offensive front. Mm-hmm. And I think Auburn is equipped to be much better offensively this year. But to me, I know everything in that offense hinges on Jackson Arnold this year, but he's got to have the time to throw the football. And that offensive line, to me, is the absolute key to this team offensively in moving forward. Is this line is as good as advertised? If it is, watch out for this Auburn team offensively this year.
I mean, we've seen great quarterbacks who suddenly look like when you pour water on a robot or something, right? Like, we've seen that when the defensive line can start getting to him. Coach, I can't imagine there are better feelings as a defensive line coach than when a defensive line has completely disrupted the other team's passing game. Because he can have all the timing in the world, and he can have Calvin Johnson and Terrell Owens out there. But the fact is, if the quarterback's having to look for defensive ends the moment he gets the ball, I don't really think you're going to have much of an offense. And that's something I think Auburn fans have seen. You know, they've been on the business end of that for a couple years. And with this offensive line, I think there's the hope that maybe you could, and with this defense, but there's the hope with the offensive line that you can give your offense a fighting chance.
Yeah, no doubt. There's nothing like a disruptive defensive lineman, you know. So, yeah, but I'm excited about the O-line, too. I know we're so much bigger, Andy. We look like an offensive line.
Now, let me give you the sizes right now, okay? if it's the guys that we think. Xavier Chaplin, 6'7", 348 at left tackle. Mason Murphy, 6'5", 319 at right tackle. Jeremiah Wright, 6'5", 348 at right guard. Dylan Wade, 6'4", 315 at left guard. And Connor Luce, 6'3", 303 at center. That's the size you want out of your offensive front.
That's SEC line. For sure,
and it's not just about the size, but if the size is a problem, everything else has to go right. If you don't have that, Andy, we are we're up against a break, but thank you so much for giving us some of your time and tell everybody what's coming up on the horizon for you guys.
Well, right now we're in week one of a two-part interview with Ronnie Baines on the Talking Tigers podcast. Ronnie, who played football and baseball at Auburn in the 60s, went on to a Hall of Fame coaching career, primarily as the baseball coach at Tallahassee High School, where he won 5 state championships and was a runner-up numerous times. And while he was in his coaching career, he began a Hall of Fame career as an official, first on the high school level, and 3 years in was already working SEC games. And after 13 years in the SEC, went on to the NFL and worked on the field for 14 years as an NFL official and then 14 more years in a supervisory role in the NFL. He and his 3 sons all have been officials or are currently officials. Two of those sons and Ronnie have combined for 5 Super Bowls.
Wow.
Think about that for a second.
Wow.
The other is an ACC official right now. So they're all 3 at either the high power 4 or the NFL. And now some of their sons are starting their careers as high school officials.
Amazing.
So there's 3 generations of the Baines officiating. And this is week 1. Week 2 starts on Monday, and we continue that. As you mentioned, Dan, we start Tiger Talk on the 18th. And then we get ready for that first game over on Wings 94.3. On the 29th at Baylor. So really, really looking forward to this season. Brett Edens, by the way, will be joining our crew this year.
Oh, great.
He'll be taking the spot of Will Herring. Will was with us for 2 years, but is stepping away with family responsibilities, and we certainly understand that. We will miss Will, who did a terrific job as a sideline reporter and a pre, post, and halftime analyst with us. But we look forward to keeping some defense on the crew.
There you go.
And having one of Don's guys up front and Brett Edens joining our crew. So
Thank you, Andy.
That's fantastic. We might need to track down Brett Edens before the season starts and get him on.
I would
be careful what you wish for.
Maybe Coach Dunn will be in here so we can keep him behaving himself. I don't know, but it's that'll
just
be.
Let those two guys trade stories for about an hour.
Oh boy,
I can't wait.
Thanks, Andy.
We'll get to work on that. Thank you, Andy.
You have a great day. War Eagle.
The voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. We'll be back with more. You're listening to the Tuesday Drive.
Opening August 27th in Casita, Alabama, it's Clubs and Hatchets.
And Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Tuesday Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with the coach, Don Dunn, hanging out with us. Drew at the controls. Really appreciate Andy Burcham, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, hanging out with us for a big chunk of hour number one. If you missed any of that, podcasts of the drive available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com, use the podcast center, or go to your favorite podcasting platform and just search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. That should be available wherever you get your favorite podcasts, all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. You know, I'd love to throw it out there to folks who maybe haven't been able to go to the practices that we've been able to see, you know, players or position groups that you're excited about. Because, I mean, when Justin reached out, you know, last night, early this morning, about players that had caught my eye, you know, for a piece in the Observer, like it struck me how many different spots of the team where you can point to a player or two. And one of the first places, we had different guys, but Andy's point about, like, the way Hugh Freeze has recruited over the last few years, there's not the same kind of pressure for true freshmen to step in at very many spots like there were like there was in his first year when you were talking about, you know, Keldrick, or last year with the receivers and the secondary. Like, you didn't have that sort of need for your true freshmen to immediately start contributing. This year, for the most part, I feel like Auburn has freshman-proofed a lot of the depth chart. I would say defensive line, especially if the plan is
the rotation.
Yeah, if you're talking about 15 to 20 full-throttle snaps and that's all you're asking for, I don't know if Auburn has the numbers to do that without Jordan Crawford and Malik Autry being two of those players giving full-throttle defensive line snaps. Antonio Coleman could potentially be one of the defensive ends asked to do that as well. And then, I mean, it's and when you watch Jordan and Malik, it would be very easy to be convinced that they're not freshmen. Like, these are two guys who look
the part.
They look the part of SEC defensive linemen, and the fact that they happen to be true freshmen is almost beside the point. And when you got horses like that, coach, you let them run, right? Like,
right.
You, I mean, yeah, and that's something, you know, Auburn has. And Andy mentioned Omar Mabson.
Yeah.
Omar is, and I don't know, like, Omar, a lot of the buzz Omar was getting was without Damari Alston and Jeremiah Cobb taking snaps. And I don't know if when you reinsert Damari Alston and Jeremiah Cobb, if that takes away really any daylight for Omar Mabson this year. I don't know. But the fact is, he's looked very impressive. I mean, Hugh Freeze was talking about him. It was a question directly, you know, about Omar, but still, Hugh Freeze was glowing in his praise on Saturday. Apparently, Damari Alston came over yesterday and told the media Omar Mabson's for real, and you know, and said this is a guy to keep your eye on. I think that's a position. I mean, it was so easy to just assume it was going to be upperclassmen. It was so easy to think, oh, Damari's a senior, Jeremiah Cobb's in his third year, Darrell Robinson's come in from UConn. There's probably not going to be a lot of opportunity. There's probably not going to be a lot of that available for the true freshman running backs. But if you can create your own opportunities if you're prepared enough and you're skilled enough and you take advantage when you get the ball, you know, suddenly. Suddenly, we got to start figuring out.
Get you on the field.
Yeah, you got to recalculate. Who's getting those opportunities and when they get them. And so, I think Omar Mabson's done. I have no idea what kind of season he's going to have.
Right.
But he's done what he would need to do
so
through
far.
Through the first week or so. Yeah. Especially as far as when we can watch, he's done everything you need to do to make a very. I mean, the thought that a reclassifying running back, you know, could be. in the mix for snaps. Like that's really
that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean that's remarkable. It's a guy who should be a senior in high school, yeah. and he could potentially be on the field in the SEC. And that's something it's become, you know, a week before practice started. It didn't seem like the intrigue around running back was going to be which of the upperclassmen. Oh, right. Is it going to be Damari or Jeremiah or Darrell? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be a committee? Is one of them going to break through and show that he's better than the other two? Mm-hmm. You didn't really talk about the freshmen. You didn't talk about the five scholarship running backs. You talked about the three upperclassmen. It sounds like Auburn's got, and Alvin Henderson's emerging too. I wouldn't, you know, I just because Omar's getting a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. You know, Alvin's still a player that a lot of people have high expectations of, but no, that's a spot where it's not just that Omar Mabson reclassified and didn't go through the spring. It's that he's found a way to look like a guy who could make some noise, and that's. Yeah, it's not something that I necessarily, and I'd seen a little Omar, not as much as some of the other people on the beat. You know, Jacob watched him every game,
every night. Yeah.
And Justin covered a lot of those games for the OA News. I didn't see him as much as those guys, but the thought that he's put himself in position like this to where Andy Burcham, you know, it's one of the first guys Andy wanted to talk about when we're talking about the stories of preseason practice so far. So it's been that's really impressive, and it's cool. Coach, that when we talk about Omar and Malik, we're talking about an Auburn kid and an Opelika kid.
Yeah,
like you're talking about couple of the most promising true freshmen on this team, a couple of the true freshmen that people think could be on the field very early in the season.
5 miles away
are two and you got the Falk brothers too. I mean Highland Holmes, yep. Not from that far away.
Right,
Perry right. Or not? No, I'm sorry, Cam. You got Cam from Central, you know, just up the road. Perry's a Mobile guy, but you got some. Look, it was, and that was something. Whether it was Hugh Freeze or somebody else, a couple years ago when Auburn was looking for a coach, the thinking was, it sounds great to recruit 50 states. It sounds great to recruit the globe, but when you've got the kind of talent in a 200, 300 mile radius that you have as the head coach at Auburn, to not take advantage of that. Is to let an opportunity go by like you, that's yeah. Something that one it should be local recruiting should be a strength, you know, and being able to get, especially when it's a guy where you're the closest big time school, right? When you're the closest big time school to that guy's hometown, and Auburn's been able to land under Hugh Freeze. Auburn's landed several players where you could describe them that way, where right. It's like, yeah, you know, they stayed in the shadow, mm-hmm. They grew up in the shadow of Auburn University and stayed home.
Yeah.
And the best Georgia teams, the best Alabama teams, the best LSU teams tend to have players where you talked about it that way. You, right. You know, you said Florida, right? Like the best yep. players on some of the best teams in those schools' histories, regional products. Auburn, that was something that had become a problem over the years, to the point where you almost started to expect, like, oh, he's local. Is it a strength that right. He's local, or right. is it a weakness? Yeah. And Hugh Freeze has done. I think that's one aspect of the job where prioritizing keeping local recruits at home,
mm-hmm.
and not letting them go play big time football far away when there's big time football to be played, in your hometown.
Yeah,
that's something that I think Hugh Freeze has correctly. I think he's prioritized it. And it was the right move to prioritize it, and it could pay huge dividends this year when you think about some of the local talent on this year's team. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. We'll take a break. We'll be back to wrap up hour number one. You are listening to the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Coach Don Dunn in the studio, Drew at the controls. Fun first hour. Big shout out again to Andy Burcham for joining us to help preview, to recap first few days of preseason practice and preview what's going on, not just with the Auburn football team in a couple of weeks. We talked a little soccer,
right?
And Auburn men's golf has been in the headlines as well. So we went around the horn with Andy. Tiger talk coming up. He mentioned that the Monday the 18th,
right,
first day of Tiger talk this season. You can catch all of that on Wings 94.3. So if you missed any of Andy Burcham on the show in hour number one, check out the podcast. Podcast The Drive, presented wherever you get your favorite podcast. 334-32, wherever you get your favorite podcast. That is all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Go to ESPNAU.com, use the podcast center, or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Phone line 334-321-1390, presented by Skybar. Love to hear from you as to, you know, we're coming up on, we're about a weekend to Auburn preseason practice. And is there a position group? Is there a player that you're excited about, even concerned about? Because I think the answer for concern would probably be Jackson Arnold. I think that folks, right, just because the quarterback position is so important, and it feels lose-lose, because if Jackson looks great, folks are going to wonder if that has something to do with Auburn's defense. And if Jackson struggles, folks will, you know, you won't see, it's hard to see any positives in that as you get ready for the season. But I think that with Jackson Arnold, I think not overreacting is probably the key. Like, you don't want to overreact to a good day or a so-so day, right. And you also don't, like, I just wonder, like, it's difficult to, especially before you start getting into full contact practices. You can talk about accuracy, but like in general, it's pretty tough to assess this quarterback had a good day or a bad day. I think with Jackson on Saturday, because I was able to go to the practice in Jordan-Hare on Saturday before the fire sale. I've got a lot to report on, don't I? My adventure before the and I know a lot of folks will be wondering about how I did at the fire sale. So I'll promise that, you know, we'll talk about that in a future segment. But the practice on Saturday, I did think there were times when Jackson Arnold looked rushed or flustered, and got rid of the ball probably sooner than he wanted, or didn't go where he wanted. I had a hard time figuring out how much of that was Jackson and how much of that was his protection. How much of that was a defensive lineman was throwing off the timing of the play. And that just, I mean, that's something, said it in the first hour. Like, you can feel great about your skill position players. You can feel great about your quarterback. But if you have protection issues, and Auburn, you know, betting very, very big on two incoming transfers at right tackle and left tackle, if you have protection issues, all those intricate plans that you've got for your offense probably aren't gonna, it's not gonna work too well, because ultimately keeping the front seven away from the ball is the most important part of an offense.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's so hard, like you said, Dan, this early when it's really not 100% full speed. But you would hope, like you said, that the quarterbacks may be a little more accurate when they're not going full speed. Yep. So, you know, it could be a lot of things. Could be the timing. Maybe first day really in that situation. And
felt like Saturday was a lot of checking down.
Yeah.
Felt like Saturday was a lot of like, okay, maybe this was a play where he had
an option.
Maybe he had aspirations with more time to go downfield, and instead it turned into a scramble, and it turned into,
or drop the ball off.
It turned into a dump off or a scramble.
One good thing I think we did see that he can run the ball pretty well.
He can run the ball. He can throw it away
when
he does it. Like,
I think that is a key. Don't take an unnecessary sack. Let it still be second and seven, not second and 20.
And there's probably a more, you know, there's an overly cautious version of that, where when you're, you have to be willing to take some chances as a quarterback, or else you can make it very easy for the other team to figure out. Like, if you're only willing to shoot layups as a quarterback, it can be tough to spread a defense out. But with Jackson, I think that has to come with experience, right?
Yeah.
Knowing,
yeah.
Okay, well, this isn't. I mean, that was one of the things about Bo playing as a true freshman was the desire to always want to hit a home run play. And it's like, you know, there are times, and I think it if you notice maybe the thing that changed the most about Bo Nix, aside from the talent around him, the thing that changed the most about Bo Nix from the beginning of his college career to the end was his willingness to...
His patience, right.
I think a willingness to settle when the big play wasn't there rather than try to create the big play out of scratch, you know, out of nothing.
And that comes with maturity, that comes with experience. You know, as a freshman or when you're young, you want to make that big play. I've got to make a big play. I've got to make a big play when you don't have to make a big play.
And maybe a couple of times attempting to make the big play,
right,
and having catastrophe,
yeah,
strike.
Wow.
Like
and
that I
crushes your confidence.
And I can't imagine. I mean, that's got to be as powerful a learning tool for that,
oh, yeah,
right? As I mean, you go out there and make a couple of those, mm-hmm, of those game-changing,
yeah,
mistakes,
yeah,
in your effort to make a big play, where it's like, I mean, yes, it doesn't seem great to throw it away or to scramble for 1 or 2 yards out of bounds,
mm-hmm,
but you choose the alternative, and it's a turnover, or it's, hey, I'm going to cut it upfield instead of going out of bounds, and you get a face mask to the chest, right? Like these things happen, and suddenly the quarterback, you know, those are
I get rid of it a little faster.
Yeah, those are instructive moments in a quarterback's career. And I think with Jackson, I mean, that dude, again, didn't watch every play of his first 2 years at Oklahoma,
right?
But that's a guy who had to learn on the fly.
Yeah,
like you think about what he and that to me is where the Bo Nix comparison,
yeah,
makes some sense. Now, Bo triumphed more at Auburn than Jackson did at Oklahoma. Bo, mm-hmm, Bo was a better quarterback,
yeah,
but Jackson Arnold was a huge recruit who went to Oklahoma, uneven production, even got benched early in the season. But he was having to make big plays with injuries on the offensive,
right,
line, limiting his protection,
receivers,
and with injuries at receiver, limiting his options as far as where,
yeah,
he could go,
and switching coordinators, all kinds of problems.
I mean, you have to imagine that's got to be it's got to be very difficult, especially for a quarterback getting,
yep,
his first chance. Like this isn't a guy who got to step in and have an awesome situation, and then suddenly it turned into this.
Right.
This was his first time out there, and it was. I think it would have been easy for folks to look at it and think, "Oh, Jackson's the problem." But that's not the attitude you get from people talking. Like, I mean, even
his former coach
talking to Brent Venables at Media Days.
He
like
was
the fact,
awesome.
It would have been very easy for Brent Venables
to blame him,
just sort of brush it aside.
Yeah.
You know, just sort of casually. Kirby Smart is a great example. I think Kirby Smart is professional in all ways, but at Media Days, if you're asking Kirby about a player who left Georgia to go play somewhere else, I would expect a brief answer. Like,
mm-hmm,
I would expect a brief, polite answer, but he wants to focus on the guys he's got,
right,
and this season. And the contrast that would be Brent Venables, who's also focused on a huge year and who has a lot to be excited about this year, but he was willing to shed,
yeah,
some light on that Jackson Arnold stuff.
Yeah.
And it really does, like, that is, I mean, Andy said it now, number one, hard to overstate how important Jackson Arnold is to this entire season.
Yes.
For Auburn, because his production, I mean, most of the best seasons by a quarterback in the last, I mean, this century, the best seasons by an Auburn quarterback have usually been the best seasons for Auburn.
Right.
Like, you look at Jason in 04,
mm-hmm,
you look at Cam in
10,
Nick Marshall in 13,
right,
Stidham in 17.
Yep.
I mean, there are, like, the best years, the best individual years for a quarterback at Auburn have generally been the best seasons on the field. And if Auburn can harness that,
mm-hmm,
with Jackson Arnold, you maybe have a chance to do a lot better than you've done in your first couple of seasons and surprise some people. But it's hard to envision that with pedestrian play from Jackson Arnold or mistake prone football,
yeah,
from Jackson Arnold. And so I think these next few weeks will be important as far as working the kinks out, and Auburn,
mm-hmm,
would love to. I mean, that thing Hugh Freeze said last week, it is And I guess I'm curious about that, Coach. Hugh Freeze talked about how important it was for specifically Jackson Arnold to leave the field with confidence. Like he you know, one of his new, I think he's done this in the past, but a restated goal for Hugh Freeze is to make Jackson Arnold as confident as confident as possible when leaving the field every day. What sorts of things do you feel like, and you can single out quarterback, mm-hmm. but just in general, if you're a coach and you want a position group, you want your starters mm-hmm. at that position group to leave practice as confident as possible, what are sort of methods, what are some steps you could take to help ensure that those guys are feeling, at least your most important guys, are feeling good about where they are with the season approaching?
Yeah, well, you know, take the position I coach, D-line. You want to leave practice or a scrimmage or a team drill, you know, a one-on-one, you want to win. The pass rush drill, you want to, get to the quarterback. On a 7-on-7, you want to, you know, again, get to the quarterback. A team situation, you want to, you know, stop the run, get off the field on third down, and you want to win the drill. You know, that was a famous line of a couple of coaches I work with is win the drill. Now, sometimes I use that negative. You're only trying to win the drill. You're not trying to accomplish what we're doing, but you want that group, especially say a scrimmage next Friday night. I think they're going to scrimmage in the stadium. You want your defense to leave the field feeling good about what they did during the scrimmage. Now, if they're giving up bomb after bomb or long runs or can't get off the field on third down or just, you know, can't contain the quarterback, little things like that, little wins. And a lot of that's going to be scripted, I'm sure, too. A smart coach will script it where the offense does well and the defense does well. You don't want one-sided complete dominance because that's when you lose confidence in what you're trying to get done.
Speaking of the you know, the stadium that they'll be scrimmaging in.
Right.
I drove back home Sunday night and they had the new screen on.
Yeah, I went into work the last two nights and it's lit up like Grand Central.
I tell you what, you can see
all around town.
You can see the new screen from the Circle K at Wire and Shook.
Yes.
Like I just want like think about you can see when it's dark and they've got the new screen on at Jordan-Hare. You can see it. Like you can see
it on. I guess it's maybe since maybe I think since the rest of the,
since Sunday night. I think they've run it at night to get it ready. But it's, I mean, from
I didn't
the,
know what was going on.
Yes, I was thinking
I
to myself,
it was the end of time.
I was thinking
the sun was coming up.
I was at Circle K thinking, boy, the softball screen is real. If that's the softball screen, it's really bright. And
no,
like
I thought the stadium lights were on.
Yeah,
but it was the scoreboard.
It's the new scoreboard.
Yeah,
and
that's gonna be something.
You can see that. I'm telling you, you
it
can
lit
see
up the whole town.
You can see that. You can see the lights mm-hmm. on the new scoreboard from the Circle K at Wire and Shug. And like you can see it from Shug Jordan.
Oh yeah,
and that's that is not.
You can see it from over here to country, where we are.
You can see it from the barbecue place.
Yeah.
No, it is going to be going to be a new look when they're playing.
It's going to be exciting.
And that's, I mean, I think Georgia, the night game, week six, could be the first time things are fully operational at night like that. And
it'll
this baby's
be rocking.
It'll be rocking, and it's just a matter of keeping the faith until then.
Yeah.
You've got multiple opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I look at this Baylor game. Even though it's on the road, I do think it's comparable to, and I know Baylor is expected to be a top half of the Big 12 team and maybe even a contender in that league. From a personnel standpoint, this game does remind me a little bit of Cal and Arkansas from last year,
mm-hmm.
where I think most people would take Auburn's roster over Baylor's. It's maybe not overwhelming, but I think folks would probably take Auburn's roster, and more importantly, you would take several of Auburn's opponents' rosters over Baylor. And so, if Auburn loses to Baylor, it's easy to look at that schedule and say, "Boy, you got five or six more games on this schedule that are going to be just as tough as that game you just lost, and a couple of them are against teams like Oklahoma and A&M." Like that's why it just. On top of the fact that you have those two games, those two paycheck games after Baylor, which are, you know, it's if Auburn wins in Waco, the party continues for those 2 weeks until you go to Norman in week four, and then we'll see. But if you lose to Baylor, there's nothing you can do in those 2 weeks against overmatched opponents that'll make you feel but that'll change your mind about Oklahoma.
Right.
Like nothing that you'll get in those 2 weeks. It's just a critically important game.
Yeah.
And you talk about the importance of confidence. Like, it's a critically important game for the confidence of this team with games like Oklahoma and A&M and that home game against Georgia in the first half of the year. And that Georgia game, it feels like an opportunity. It feels like Auburn's best opportunity to beat Georgia in a long time. But you have to have a team surging at that point. They got to feel, and that doesn't mean you have to go out and trounce A&M. But if A&M's your third loss of the year, you're not surging. And you know, if you're 0-3 against major conference opponents when Georgia comes to town, I think the fans will show up anyway. The place, the atmosphere won't be the problem. But what kind of team? What kind of hope do you have in that situation? As opposed to, look, if you're as advertised and you're 2-1 or better against Baylor and Oklahoma and A&M, and Georgia's coming to town and it's a 4-1 Auburn team that could be, look, Auburn's 4-1 after the A&M game. I mean, I'm bad at predicting where you'll be ranked.
Right.
But I would think 15 at the worst if you're 4-1 after A&M with Georgia coming to town. Like, I mean, so it's an opportunity to be to put the nation on notice. It's also an opportunity to lose the season in the first few games of the year. Like, I mean, that's the other side of this is that it's a long 6 games after Georgia.
Yep.
If it feels like things are headed in the wrong direction, and some of those games are some of those games after Georgia seem winnable. Like, keep in mind, Auburn's got games with Missouri, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt. Four of the five worst teams in the SEC, according to the voters.
Right.
Like those teams in Mississippi State are the bottom five in the league. Auburn plays four of them, and all four of them after Georgia. Like, Auburn's got four games against teams that were picked to finish behind Auburn in the SEC after Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get to the Georgia game.
Right.
You got to still have a pulse, and then you got to. And then maybe you can pick up some momentum in that second half of the year.
Exactly.
And it all starts in Waco.
Yep.
This started talking about the scoreboard.
Yeah.
The scoreboard in Waco is going to be the one
that people are watching.
That's the one. That's the one that's going to matter a lot.
Yeah.
And that game is 3 weeks from Friday.
Wow.
On Wings 94.3. Wow. Friday night action. Auburn in Waco against the Baylor Bears. We'll take a break and we'll be back with more. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Final 40 minutes or so. 35 minutes or so of The Drive. We'll talk with Jake Crane from Crane & Company in hour number two. The bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Jake. I really appreciate Jake jumping on to help preview the upcoming season. Coach, again, I've mentioned before, I was unavailable. I had a couple things to do in New York City these last few days. Got to see a family member who's engaged. I can't go to the destination wedding,
okay.
So it was nice to to go and meet the bride to be and see them. You know, it's one of my cousins. That was great. And then friend from Auburn is at NBC News, and she pulled some strings and got me into Monday Night Raw last night at Barclays, and I got to go to the Netflix pre-party, and I got to hang out in a suite.
Dang.
And that was some of the wrestlers came in to hang out. It was fun, and then also my buddy Neil Harrow used to be an assistant coach at Troy on women's basketball. He's the new head coach at Long Island,
okay.
LIU Brooklyn, the Sharks.
Yeah.
Rod Strickland, the men's coach at LIU, by the way. Yeah, former NBA point guard. Rod Strickland was in the office. Got to wave to Strick. But yeah, so I got to take a little tour of LIU.
Busy
and
2 days.
Meet some people there and the city doesn't sleep.
No.
So I had to
sleep when you get old.
I had to go and I always that's it's just gigantic, right? Yeah. Like
I haven't been in years, but yeah. Man, what a city.
I mean, I really spent most of my tenure, like the last 2 days, in the 5-6 yeah. blocks around the Barclays Center.
Right.
And it's still, I mean, that is a single digit percentage of the city of New York.
Oh, yeah.
And it's still just like, yeah, it was just nonstop. It's, yeah. it's a,
If you've never been, it's somewhere you need to go.
It's a fantastic place to visit. And give yourself a couple of days. Yeah. And
try to go during Christmas when it's decorated.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Oh, Thanksgiving and Christmas season in New York is wonderful. Summer's not bad. I know it can get hot. I think people might visit and think like, oh, bundle up.
No.
Nobody's freezing to death in New York in July and August. Glad to be back, but
yeah, it sounds like a good time.
I don't think I'd missed a day since basketball season ended. So I was
you deserve one.
I was on a Cal Ripken-esque streak that I'm right. Hate that it happened while the Bill knee surgery was going on, but I was able to get back. And we'll have Bill Cameron back on the show again very soon to update us on his status and preview the upcoming season. And we mentioned it earlier. I found out over the weekend, but Hugh Freeze will be talking to the media tomorrow.
Right.
And we'll have some of that for you on tomorrow's show.
Good.
Yeah, I'm curious what coach thinks of the first few days.
They were off today, so I'm sure they spent a lot of time going over what they did last week, critiquing what they did, scouting themselves, and they'll be putting a lot of input, a lot of insertion on offense, defense. They'll probably throw a bunch at them tomorrow, and then they'll probably back off a little bit with the insertion and adding stuff, and see what they can do in the scrimmage Friday night.
Yeah, I was listening to Coach Freeze on Saturday, and he brought Keldrick and Jackson Arnold in with him to answer questions. I mean, it was largely positive. Like it was mostly it's enthusiasm about players at different positions.
Right.
I'm curious if there's a group or if there's a position where Hugh Freeze has been expecting more than he's gotten so far, and if that's something that you can evaluate now, or like we were saying with Andy, if that's something where things need to get more full contact.
Yeah.
If that's something where things need to start getting more full speed. And I also, you wonder how much he'll want to go into detail about it even then. But Hugh Freeze has been pretty forthcoming in the past.
So far.
If a side of his offensive line needs to step it up, or if the quarterback himself needs to step it up, Hugh Freeze will say it.
Right.
He's been a pretty straight shooter in that regard.
From what I've gathered, which is means nothing, the linebacker position was a concern, and that's well known, and I'm sure he'll address that maybe tomorrow. I'm anxious to see what he thinks that position has been doing, how they've been doing.
Yeah, the thinking about Hugh Freeze would. I don't know how I'd explain it because I think that he's obviously got the confidence of his players. Like that's top of mind for Coach Freeze, is making sure that this group. It's not so much about how much better they're going to get over the next 2 weeks. Right, it's about their it's more mental than physical, right? I would think between now and the start of the Baylor game, and probably psychological. It's about
mind games.
Yeah, how are you feeling and
you want to be as positive as you can. You want to coach the heck out of them, and you want to get the little things done. You got to get the little things done, and there's so many little things that go into winning a football game, as we know. Field position, turnovers, penalties, 12 men on the field, just little things that you worry about. You got to address all those things.
You mentioned the linebackers, and I think it's understandable to wonder, because that's a position where Auburn lost.
They lost.
Well, I mean Mousie, he was one of the, if you think about like a guy that we didn't talk about enough going into last season, Dorian Mousie would have maybe been the number one candidate, because I think he was thought of as linebacker depth. When Auburn acquired him, And he was so valuable to the defensive attack last year. Losing him is a huge blow because he represented so much of your production. You know, he stepped in for Asante, right, and really gave you a lot of that Eugene Asante production. Mm-hmm. And to now have to figure out linebacker without, you know, some of these guys that have been leading the charge for a couple of years, you know, I think they feel good about the Maryland kid, Wheatland.
Yeah.
DeMarcus Riddick, mm-hmm, is, I think they're being careful with DeMarcus physically, but he's obviously someone who is going to be counted on to play a lot. And that's a position, coach, where you could be talking about true freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
Melendez was a buzzy player earlier in the preseason. Juice Diaz of late was someone that Hugh Freeze called out on Saturday for the way he'd been performing the last couple of days. And that's, again, it's got to be a crazy jump going from high school linebacker to SEC linebacker in a year with the responsibilities and things. It helps if you can run. And Auburn's went out and they really emphasized speed with what they were going at linebacker, and that was something Hugh Freeze was very happy to say, is, you know, they're going to make mistakes. They're making mistakes
full speed.
They're making full speed mistakes, and some of them, I think he singled out the LSU transfer, Atkins,
right,
and he said he can make mistakes and his speed can bail him out.
Right.
He can shoot the wrong gap. He can go to the wrong, but he's still able to get there fast enough to make up for to keep it from being a negative play. And that's something, it's a magic eraser, isn't it, coach? When you it's amazing how speed can fix,
speed kills.
It can fix some of those problems on a football field.
Yeah,
even at positions you don't normally associate with, and maybe even especially at those positions, mm-hmm, that you don't always associate with guys running 4.4s, right? If you've got a speed advantage on the defensive line or at linebacker, I always thought that was where, and I know we got to take a break, we'll get to Jake Crane in a sec, but I always thought when the SEC started winning all those national championships in football 20 years ago, when LSU and Florida and then Nick Saban with Alabama, like, they didn't have faster receivers than Ohio State. They didn't have faster running backs than Texas. It was the front seven.
Yes.
Like, it was the fact that you had defensive ends that were faster than your skill position players, and inside linebackers that could run like that. And I think D-linemen.
And
upgrading that level of athleticism.
You're exactly right.
It's amazing what that can do to a team, and it sounds like Hugh Freeze believes that's the sort of evolution Auburn's defense is experiencing right now. 334-321-1390. We'll take a break. When we come back, Jake Crane from Crane & Company joins us. Stick around. This is The Drive.
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Coach Don Dunn hanging out with us as Bill Cameron recovers from his surgical vacation, and he'll be back.
Yeah,
he'll be back very soon. Probably listening right now, so I need to be careful about what I say. Drew at the controls. A fun show so far. If you missed any of it, check out the podcast. Podcast The Drive, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Andy Burcham joined us in hour number one to help preview the upcoming season. Talked about some other sports in the world of Auburn athletics as well. But obviously football is front and center with Auburn and Baylor squaring off in just a little bit more than 3 weeks to open the season in Waco, to open a huge season for Hugh Freeze. And let's bring in our good buddy Jake Crane, who joins us in hour number two on Tuesdays from Crane & Company. How you doing, bud?
Man, I'm doing good. I want to wish a quick recovery to Bill from getting that facelift. I mean, you know, whatever he got. Obviously.
He's not allowed to get any more of those, actually. The doctor told him so.
Well, it's
the Joan Rivers situation.
Just
Kenny Rogers.
A good recovery, but no, just hope he's doing well.
Yeah, no, we have had contact with Bill since the surgery ended, and we are under the impression that he is recovering and should be back very soon. But in the meantime, yeah. Jake, just a couple of weeks away. Like hard. I mean, talking with Andy and realizing that, like, I mean, so they're going to do the first edition of Tiger Talk on the 18th, yeah. which is the first day of school at Auburn, and a week later they're going to go to their regular location to do Tiger Talk, and it's like that's game week. Like a week after August 18th is game week, and Auburn Baylor, I mean it's an out of conference game. It's not the end of the world. It feels like a gigantic first game for Hugh Freeze when you think about the other games on the schedule for Auburn, including away from home, not all that long after Baylor.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm thinking Coach Dunn will agree with me here. It's funny, when you're in it, it all goes by so fast.
Right.
Like, the off season goes by so fast. The season goes by so it's just because you're always doing something. Then when you get out of it, like in the media space that I'm in now, it seems to take forever until we get to the season. But, yeah, look, I mean, when you're at a place like Auburn, whether it's a conference game or a non-conference game, every game is massive, you know, and that's part of the mystique of being at a place like Auburn and being in the SEC, and that's what you aspire to because it means that much. But every game is not weighted the same. And, you know, going into year three with all the hope that we've seen on the recruiting front, kind of before here lately, but, again, this season is going to dictate how recruiting goes. It typically does. You feel like Auburn's been building to this moment. You know, you look at the roster, especially on the offensive line. You look at the depth there. You know, you're hoping you have enough in the front seven on defense, but this is the best roster that I think Auburn's had in the past half decade. You look at the wide receiver room, I'd put it up there against just about anybody.
I think it might be the best group that for that position. That's as good as Auburn's ever been. Like, I don't think,
without a doubt.
Even when Auburn had guys who projected as pros, you didn't talk about Auburn having two of the best six receivers in the SEC, which is where they are right now when you think about the preseason all conference lists, right? Cam and Singleton both. Oh, go ahead, Jake.
Well, I mean, even in 2004 when you had Aaron Machado and Obamanu, like, you knew they were good, but they didn't get the hype that these guys are getting, and they're two really different type of players. But when you look at this Baylor game, Dan, I mean, this is I don't like to use the term must win early in the season. But this feels about as close to a must-win as you can have in the position that Auburn is in right now when you look at what they're going to have to go through in these first 4 to 5 games. So getting off on the right foot against a Baylor team that I think is respected nationally, some people have even picked them to win the Big 12, I think it's going to take the pressure's never off. But if it goes in the other direction and it's bad, you're going to continue to see all these things that have been talked about in the offseason accumulate and put it almost feels like Hugh Freeze is in the position that Billy Napier was going into last year. I think that's the best comp possible. And we saw what happened against Miami. Now Florida was able to turn it around and at the end of the year and now have hope going into this season. But if you're Auburn, if you're able to go and beat a Baylor team on the road, it does feel like it alleviates a lot of the simmering before the eruption that we've seen going on.
Both things can probably be true, right, Jake? Baylor can be good enough to contend for a Big 12 championship, but Auburn could still have a personnel advantage. And I would look and say,
I think they do.
And if you compare Baylor to the rest of Auburn's schedule, right, it feels a little bit like Cal and Arkansas last year, where it's like, look, you can slip a game. You know, if a game slips away, that can happen. But you've got much more talented opponents on the schedule later.
Yeah.
And if you're losing a game to Cal or Arkansas, you know, you wonder how you're going to compete against top half of the SEC teams. And I think it's fair to say, that about Baylor, where it's like Baylor could be one of the best teams in the Big 12. I don't know where they would be picked to finish in the SEC this year. My guess is probably pretty close to where Auburn is, and maybe even behind Auburn. If you were looking at, like, is this Baylor team better than Arkansas? Like, are they better than Missouri? Like, I think, and again, I don't know, and it's fair to wonder these things because you've got, not only do you have that game, but you've got some gigantic games after that game in a pivotal season for Hugh Freeze.
Yeah. Well, to your point, when you look at the schedule before the season, and again, it's all speculation, but you're looking at teams where you feel like Auburn should have an overall better roster than that team. I think most people would say that Auburn has an overall better roster than Baylor, but you are going on the road. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of questions about Jackson Arnold, and being deficient at quarterback can derail a lot of the best parts of your roster, just like having a quarterback that's efficient and can do things can elevate the rest of your roster. So, I mean, I agree with you, Auburn is better, but this is a four-quarter, 60-minute game, first game of the year on the road, which can be a good thing or it can be a bad thing, depending on how your team is made up. But the biggest advantage I see that Auburn has is on the edge of the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. I don't think Baylor has – Baylor's best part of their defensive line and offensive line is the interior. When you look at the offensive line, it's the guards and the center, and they're pretty high quality. There's a lot of questions at tackle for Baylor. So when you look at a guy like Keldrick Falk, I would take a pretty good guess that they're going to have to find a way to get two bodies on him most of the game, which frees you up in other spots on that weak side, not only with four-man rushes but pressures as well. So when you look at the defensive line, the strength is in the interior, and it's really one guy I think they have that's an NFL guy. So you feel like this Auburn offensive line, especially at the tackle position, should be able to win the edge, which wins you the football game. So, yes, Auburn has the advantages. I think if Auburn goes and plays somewhat clean and doesn't lose the game and makes Baylor have to beat them, it's going to be very hard for Baylor to beat them. But you are going on the road, and there's a lot of questions that are still unanswered.
You mentioned Keldrick, and when you talk about the outside of the Auburn defense, you know, in the front seven, you know, guys who could impact the pass rush, the guy that's been eye-popping to me the last couple of times we've been able to visit practice, Jake, and he had, I think partially it's because he had such a pedestrian first year at Auburn, it's Amaris Williams. Like, Amaris Williams was a gigantic recruit. He was a huge flip for Auburn when they got him from North Carolina. I think he was going to Florida when Auburn flipped him. You know, didn't really put it together in his first year to get on the field very much. Yeah. He has been one of the stories of the offseason, and watching him on Saturday, he was putting on the kind of performance that makes you wonder about the Auburn offensive line. And it's like, well, maybe it could be that defensive lineman's really, really good, right? Like, he was putting on that kind of performance, yeah. Jake.
Well, when you look at how he was built physically coming out of high school and you watch him bend and the way he can turn, you knew it was just a matter of him figuring it out. You know, he was like me in the garage. He has a bunch of tools. He just didn't know what to do with them. And it takes – I always thought, and I think Coach Dunn will agree, I mean, he coached it at the highest level. It takes longer unless you're just a freak of nature to adjust to the line of scrimmage as a young guy,
right,
as it does to play wide receiver or DB, where you're on the outside and it's a little bit more free-flowing. Because, again, the bodies are bigger, the bodies move faster, and they're bigger. And you just can't physically overwhelm people consistently. So you knew he had the tools. But I want to say this about fall camp, because it's funny to me, you know, regardless of how good one side does, everybody thinks the other side is bad. What you want is you don't want one side of the ball to dominate all of fall camp.
Right.
If that's the case, then you're cooked. You're absolutely cooked. And especially early in fall camps, even with the experienced teams, you're going to see the defense do well because the offense doesn't have to game plan against the defense. Auburn will not play Auburn again this year. They did that in the spring game. So you going out there and scheming up against each other is an absolute waste of time. So right now you're running a decent amount of base stuff with your add-ins, and you always tell the defense, don't play the play. But I'm going to tell you what, Dan, they're trying to look good. They're going to play the play. that's what they do.
That's
so
exactly
they
right.
They know when the offense gets in a formation, there's a good chance they at least know what side it's coming to. And then you get in the game week and all that stuff, and it changes because you're going to get scouts. So you don't want reports to read offense dominates fall, defense dominates fall. You want it to go back and forth, because that means it's competitive and it gives you the best chance to win playing complimentary football once the season starts.
You had an audience on Saturday too, which I think makes it even tougher for those guys to just, like you said, block everything out and just run the play on defense. You know the media's watching, and you know there's a couple hundred fans in Jordan-Hare Stadium watching as well. That can intensify things. Yeah. I think in practice, well, and I think that's part of the reason Hugh Freeze has been okay with an audience watching practice for much of this offseason.
Well, the best part about having an audience, and some guys you already know about because they've been through it. You know, they played in these games. You're not worried about them letting the crowd affect them. It's for those new guys that are trying to win spots, because I've seen a lot of guys that in practice, when we're in a closed practice situation, they look really good. You put people out there that are watching around, they turn into a different player. And you need to know that before 100,000 people pack in there and they got to play. So, again, it's a little bit of a litmus test on how they handle a different environment. So I like that, obviously, to a point where you don't have too many people seeing what you're doing for too often. Maybe I'm just petty, but if it was me, there'd be the most limited media availability except for scrimmage situations that there could possibly be. Now I'm obviously on the opposite coin of that, but no.
Oh, I don't expect to see any scrimmages. I just think that's the way Hugh Freeze has been very cool since arriving at Auburn about allowing the media to watch a lot of practice in the spring and the fall. I'd love to see a scrimmage, not counting on it. Right? Yeah. Like that's not the way it's worked the last couple of years.
One of the best head coaches I work for said when it comes to the media and seeing stuff in fall camp, he goes by the Bible of, I'll just tell you what happened.
And that's what Dave Aranda's doing. I think it's been very limited at Baylor as far as media access. Jake, we got the coaches poll earlier this week. Going to have Texas and Ohio State, the first ever 1-2 game on opening weekend. We had Alabama Florida State a couple years ago that was 1-3. Florida State did not finish that season 3, if you recall correctly. But anything jump out at you from the first poll of the year?
Well, I mean, they should call it the GA poll because that's who really votes in it. None of those coaches are filling out that survey.
Aren't those guys busy on Saturday? How are they going to know?
Like, I would bet Kurt Cignetti's the only one that fills it out.
I mean,
probably.
Just so he can put Indiana up high.
The thought that Hugh Freeze is watching West Coast Big Ten games so he can, like, have an accurate poll.
He's over here trying to get Jackson Arnold right. What do you think he's asking? Asking DJ Durkin how he thinks Syracuse is going to do against Tennessee.
Yeah, should BYU be ahead of Texas Tech or behind Texas? Like, no,
we got 12. I'm only worried about 12 teams, and I know who they are.
Yeah,
no, I think that's a great way to.
It's the most useless thing ever, and it's hilarious because nobody really knows that. None of the coaches voted. They're like, oh, my God, Sarkisian voted. Texas is number one. Man, they must really hate Sark putting him up. Those coaches don't care.
And you used to be able, and we gotta let you go on this one, Jake, because we're out of time. But you used to be able to use, for the preseason poll, you could look at last year. You're like, how'd last year finish? These teams don't look like last year's teams. No. Like, that's not the way it works anymore.
Here's what I'll say before I go. Preseason polls are like Tinder matches. It only matters if you can close the deal.
Great stuff, Jake. Tell everybody how they can find you on Crane & Company.
Oh, man, look, it's really easy. We're everywhere. If you watch or listen, we're on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It's Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N, and Company. It's prediction time. We've already got Alabama and Georgia out. We're going to do Auburn this week as well, so come check us out, and let's see how right I can be and wrong my brother can be.
Jake Crane joining us as he does every Tuesday. Really appreciate it, Jake. We'll take a break, and we will wrap the show up. Stick around. This is The Drive.
106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of the show. I think we're about to have the music. Appreciate Jake Crane joining us in hour number two. If you missed any of that, podcast The Drive available wherever you get your favorite podcasts, all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Andy Burcham joined us in hour number one. Great stuff from both Andy and Jake. Coach, again, thank you so much these last couple of days. I always have a blast getting to waste everybody's time with you and really appreciate that you guys were able
to
do the show these last couple of days.
Always fun. Appreciate you, Drew.
Oh yeah, Drew, great job as always. We will we'll see if Bill Cameron's feeling up
for
tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll check in on him tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll test out the knee before the show.
Yeah,
see how he's feeling.
Hopefully he's doing better.
Yeah, it's game time decision tomorrow. So we'll see how Bill's feeling.
Keep rehabbing, Bill.
In the meantime, for Andy Burcham and Jake Crane and Coach Don Dunn and Drew at the controls, Dan Peck. Thank you so much for joining us. Talk to you tomorrow. Good night.